Oh, so you may not be able to answer this question.
By the time I was 6 years old, I was pronounced dead 3 times.
Wow.
A robot called Dr. Roomboto, who is a Roomba with a robot body put on top of it.
That's fantastic.
You arguably can get away with just about anything. So it's a really moral conundrum. If you can get away with anything, would you be a hero or would you be a villain?
That's a great answer. Welcome to Talking Comics. This will be episode 11. We're still pretty, young, but we're starting. So I appreciate you giving us, some time. Okay. So we have Chris Saloff with us today. Can you give us some background? How'd you get into this?
So I was playing D&D with my friends, and we were having a lot of fun. So I started drawing the campaign into a comic book. And then one of the guys was like, well, you need a colorist. You need to go to Kickstarter. And I was like, what's Kickstarter? And he was like, oh, it's this place. You just put stuff up there and people send you money. And that's literally how it was explained to me was, you post it and they will come. That wasn't the case the first time. So I had no idea what I was doing. And it was not that easy. But now, we're 5 years in. I've done 10 crowdfunding campaigns, 9 books. So, I figured it out as I went along. And now here we are. The comic is called Crit, Constantly Running Into Trouble. And it is 100% written using tabletop gaming, Dungeons and Dragons, a homebrewed version of it, in the superhero version. So it's a modern Arthurian tale with superheroes.
I was able to read a little bit of Zero in issue 1. Jeff sent me a couple of them over. So I was able to read issue 1 there. I loved it. The artwork was fantastic. And I'd love to go into, in a few minutes, the art and the process. But first off, I just want to do so I've done a couple interviews so far, and I just like doing some generic comic questions first, and then we'll jump into the actual comic and creation and all that stuff. Is that okay with you?
Yeah, good.
So cool. Some of the questions I asked, who was the first superhero or comic character, your first favorite?
First superhero that was my favorite would have been Mighty Mouse or Banana Man. Cartoons when I was a young child. That got me into superheroes. And then, Batman carried through even till now, Spawn, those things. But if I go back to my really, really early childhood, I remember running around the house singing the Banana Man song. So,
I forgot all about Mighty Mouse until you just brought that up. Yep. 'Cause I remember now as a kid, I used to love that show. I forgot all about that show.
Oh, yeah. It was one of my favorites.
Yeah, that's amazing. I love that. I have to write it down. I'm going to show my kids that. We just a real quick, I haven't really touched a comic book in, 20, 25 years. And then back in December, my daughter discovered comic books. She was it was her 10th birthday. Our birthdays are 2 days apart in December, 19th and 21st. So I always take the days off and we just go around and do fun stuff. We play D&D too. We play games. We do all this stuff. We found ourselves in a comic shop, game store, right? That had comics. And she saw Harley Quinn comics. She's like, can I get these? And I'm like, absolutely. And the last 4 months, 5 months, we've gone crazy, but we've had so much fun with it. So I said, I forgot about the Mighty Mouse. I'm going to have to show her those. That'll be amazing.
Yeah. Mighty Mouse was my favorite when I was a kid.
Right. Yeah. I forgot all about Mighty Mouse. I'm going to have to, I have to just go back and look at that. So what was the first comic book you ever read? Mighty Mouse comics?
I have a trade paperback of Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, the original Eastman Laird black and white Ninja Turtles.
Yes, that's fantastic. I picked up the last Ronin series, the trade.
Dude, that is really good.
So we're leaving on a trip tomorrow. We're going to be gone a couple of weeks. We're going to do these from the road, but I picked up that book to read on the way or on the trip. So I'm looking forward to that. All right, if you could live in any comic book universe, which one would it be?
Oh, pretty bad. Everything's always happening. Do I have superpowers or do I not?
Well, that's the next question, actually. So we'll come back to it. So if you could have any superpower, what would it be? And then we'll say you have that superpower in the universe.
Invisibility.
Okay.
There's superpowers that I think are A, the most useful, and B, the most dangerous, and that's invisibility and shape changing.
Okay.
They're the most morally ambiguous ones you can find. So you have to think about it. If you're invisible, or if you're able to go invisible, or if you're able to shapeshift, you arguably can get away with just about anything. So it's a really moral, it's like a moral conundrum. If you can get away with anything, would you be a hero or would you be a villain? You know, that's why I always like picking those two, because I think it'd be interesting to see what would happen. So I would go invisibility.
I love that. All right. So which universe would you live in with invisibility?
Probably Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, because there's a lot of really cool mutants in that one. And you know, I really like the Mousers. Those are cool. And it's just a bunch of ninjas. So, like, if I go invisible, I'm fine. It's not like every other week some alien from another planet is about to take over and kill everyone, like Invincible and Superman. You know what I mean? Like,
right.
No one wants to live in DC Universe because they can't even clean up Gotham.
Yeah. Like, yeah. No. My daughter, picked DC just because she likes Harley Quinn, but. Whatever.
Yeah, I mean, sure, like, I love the stories in those universes, but living in there is just like a total night. Like, imagine living in Marvel. You have, you know, New York, which has the most superheroes, yet every other day it's getting ripped apart. You know, like, my insurance bills just to live there are going to be insane, you know?
Right. How many times did you get destroyed?
Right. And Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, I don't have to worry about my insurance rates. I don't have to worry about the world getting blown up. I can live a normal life and I can just go invisible whenever I don't like what's going on.
Hey, that's a perfect answer. Well, that's the next question. Which comic book character would you want as your sidekick?
Let's see. That's a good one. Had to be somebody. You know what? Plastic Man. Because he can go, he's either a good guy or a bad guy, and his powers are pretty cool. And I've seen him go through somebody by going through their nose, so that's kind of cool.
That's fantastic. All right, last one on this topic. If your life were a comic book, what would the title be? And maybe because you're a creator, it's Crit. I don't know.
It wouldn't be Crit. Crash Test Dummies.
Crash Test Dummies. I love that.
That's what I was called as a kid. By the time I was 6 years old, I was pronounced dead 3 times. By the time I was 12, I had been hit by a car once. I got, I had a bike accident, another bike accident where I was trying to, I used to do, race BMX and I was training and I jumped off of a, side of a cliff. Really, it was a cliff. It was like a 30-foot drop. But I didn't know it was a 30-foot drop. I thought it was more like a 10-foot drop, and I missed the ramp we had built and I clipped a tree. The bike was in the tree. I landed on the ground. The bike fell off the tree onto me. You know, and that's just by age 12. By age 35, I was fighting for my life twice. And yeah, so yeah, I would say Crash Test Dummies.
let's not write that comic.
No, my friends call me Winchester because I have more lives than anyone.
Right. Hey, that's okay.
I like walking around with a resurrection spell in my back pocket.
I love that. When did you start playing D&D? What age?
26, 27.
Yeah, see, I started late too. I was real late to it. I was probably in my 30s, actually, when I started playing. But I fell in love with it. I was
working at GameStop, and a bunch of the guys asked me to play. And I was like, you know, I'm nerdy, but not that nerdy. And then we played, and I really enjoyed it.
Yeah, I got a lot of those friends, too. They're like, you play D&D? No, that's not me. And then they play, and they're like, oh, okay. It's actually a lot of fun. So was that the initial inspiration from the comic book for the book, your comic?
Well, we hadn't played D&D in about 10 years, and I had this idea for superhero D&D. It was a really simple idea, you know, like we live in a world where nobody else has powers. So we just mishmashed all the classes together and built it around kind of like what kind of superpowers they'd want. And like I said, we played the first session and we laughed so hard for a month with some of the chaos that happened that I just randomly started sketching some stuff. I was really bored and it just turned into this. Like it wasn't really like I want to make a comic. This was fun. I want to draw it. I want to draw more of it. Oh, I'm finished. And my wife at the time, who, you know, my ex-wife and I are still friends. She's a phenomenal artist. We had been married for 4 years at this point, best friends for like 11 before we even got married. So I'd known her for 15 years. And I handed her the comic and she scrolled through it and she handed it back and said, it's okay. And went back to watching TV. So the next day I bought an iPad and I bought a bunch of classes on how to draw comic books. And then everything I drew, I brought to her and she ripped apart. And within about a year, I felt comfortable making a comic. So then it was more making the comic because I didn't like her response. And then it just was a snowball effect into where we're at now with almost 10 issues and a trade paperback and stuffed animals and action figures and foil covers and, you know, just all the fun stuff that comes with making comic books.
That's phenomenal. Yeah. So it's almost like a bet at that point. Like, all right, I'm going to do this to get better. I don't like that response. I definitely get that one.
Right. It was like my ego just took a big hit here. Because I thought
I'll show you. I'll make good yeah. comics. That's probably the point I'm at. I'm probably at the very beginning because I do a lot of graphic design work, but I don't like do the physically drawing part. Like I create stuff and, you know, images and stuff, but I don't draw very well. And I've attempted and it's not good at all. So I'll get there one day. And it's a lot of work. Like,
yep.
What is Practice the time perfect. Frame? Like, how long does it take you to create a comic by yourself? Like all the artwork?
100% by myself is 3,000 hours. Wow. I did the math.
For yeah. one book.
For one book.
That's
That was crazy. Issue 6. I did 100% by myself from the ground up.
Now, was that coloring and everything?
Yes. Everything. I lettered it. I colored it. I drew it. I did everything for that book, and it took me 3,000 hours. I like to stick to just drawing, not coloring, just because coloring takes me longer than drawing.
Right. And as far as issue 0 and 1 that I got to look at, the art's really good. It's the brightness of it. I don't know, just the shade or the brightness of the colors was just fantastic.
Issue 1 was the first comic I ever drew.
If I show like a couple?
Yeah, yeah. Issue 0, I didn't actually draw. A friend of mine drew that one. I drew issue 1 from the ground up, and I did most of the coloring in that too. So that was a fun book. But if you read issue 6 and 7, you're going to see a big difference in the artwork and the writing and everything. Like it's just, I'm very proud of where we've come from and where we're at.
Yeah. Well, I'm sure it gets better, right? It, you know,
it can only get better. If not, then I'm doing something wrong. I don't think I'd be, you know, 8 or 9 issues if I was doing it wrong. So I'm pretty proud of where we're at.
Do you have any favorite like creators or artists that, you know, influenced you or just kind of your
on the image guys? So, you know, Todd McFarlane, Jim Lee, Rob Liefeld, all those guys, as a kid, just loved big muscles, big guns, you know, lots of action. I've always gotten into that. As far as, you know, comic books, you know, artist wise, I've always been obsessed with Boris Vallejo. His art style is amazing, which I'll never ever get that talented. You know, that's like asking for a Lamborghini, you know?
right.
But his, I've always loved Boris Vallejo. And yeah, like I said, as far as comic books, just the Image guys, I loved what they did, and they just kind of went out there and did it. And even now they're still at it. So it speaks a lot to their talent.
100%. I started reading the Deadly Tales of the Gunslinger Spawn, but out of the 30 books I'm, you know, getting each month, like, or pulls, that's by far my favorite. I'm loving that.
Gunslinger Spawn is one of my favorites. I absolutely love Gunslinger. And then Medieval Spawn. Those are probably my two, like, top tier versions of Spawn. My favorite character in the series is Redeemer, though. I just love the whole Dark Angel aesthetic.
Okay. I haven't met him yet. So I'm just reading the Deadly Tales of the Gunslinger. I haven't gotten any. I have issue one of the Gunslinger because I just re-released it for $1 like 2 weeks ago. Uh-huh. And then I did pick up, they have a new Medieval Spawn that issue one came out last month. That was pretty good. That was really good. D&D Spawn, like who doesn't like that, right?
Right, fantasy exactly. Fantasy Spawn.
He's been
my favorite since, I think. Most challenging part of making a comic?
Yeah, what's the most challenging thing or challenging panel you've worked on or page? Oh. What's the most challenging?
I think every panel is a challenge. I even with the Talking Heads panels, you know, I like to do a lot of expressions. I'm a big expressions guy. I have friends that talk with their hands a lot, so you'll see Caliber always moving his hands when he's talking. You know, Boulder wears sunglasses, so everything, all of his expressions are in his mouth. And Bones has a mask on the entire time, so how I express him is, you know, emojis. He sends emojis in a group chat. I think that's like the hardest thing for me is to keep the storyteller, the visual aspect fresh, because I don't want, you know, I'm the artist of every book so far, except for issue zero, and I don't want anything to get stale. And I pick up a lot of books, especially when it's the same artist, and a lot of stuff just transfers from book to book. You know, it's the same pose, it's the same this, and I get it because they're on a timeline. So they're just, and sometimes I'll do that where I have, like, you know, I need the same pose and I'll grab it and I'll copy it over. Change the face a bit, but I always want to make it different in a way that it pops a little bit differently than before, because I just never want my art style to get stale. So I think that's the challenging part, is pushing myself to be better every book, because, you know, people are coming back every time. It's like a basketball game or a football game, you know? These people come to see you play every time. You want to give your best every single game, and that's how I feel about every book.
That's fantastic. That's a great answer. All right. How'd you break into this? Like, how'd you start doing the comic?
Oh, God. Well, I told you at the beginning, you know, with my wife at the time, my ex-wife, you know, ripping me apart. And then, so I had this book pretty much done. I didn't color it, though. I'd put some flat colors down, and a friend of mine was going to come in and do the rest. But he had twins, and it was COVID. And that's chaos. So he was like, "Hey, dude, I can't help you." Well, I started looking out for other colorists, and I found someone. It was about $500. They wanted to color the whole book, which was cheap, you know? And I didn't have $500, though, because I was broke and COVID bonus money hadn't come into effect yet. So I asked my wife, I was like, "What do I do?" Didn't know what to do. Friend of mine, you know, one of the players said, "Go to Kickstarter. Like I said, if you post it, they will come." I didn't have an Instagram. I made one during the campaign. I did all my research, and everything said, you want to ask for like $2,000. You want to have a t-shirt. You want to have all these things. So I did that. I didn't need $2,000. We raised, I think, $600 or $700, 30 backers. And that's with zero promotion or anything. So I wasn't unhappy at the end when I realized, you know, what Kickstarter really was, but we didn't get the money. So I was pretty bummed, but a friend of mine, like a day or two after the campaign ended, a friend of mine was like, "Hey, what's this comic book thing you're doing?" And I told him, and he's like, "Well, how much do you need?" And I'm like, "I just need $500. You know, I didn't really need a lot. My Kickstarter failed because I asked for too much money." And he's like, "Well, I got into marijuana fields real early, and I've known you for a long time, and everything you do well." He goes, "I'm sitting on my private jet right now, so I think I can spare $500. So he just sent me $500 on Facebook. Like, literally, I didn't even know that was a thing you could do. And it's like, "You have $500. And I was like, "What?" So, you know, I got the book colored and I put it on my website, and I was just selling it for like $5, you know? My first order. Now, it's funny, no one wanted to go to the Kickstarter because no one knew what Kickstarter was, but I put it on my website and I sold 150 copies of the book. So, you know, I used all that money from the printing and getting it done, and I contacted all the backers on the Kickstarter and I said, "Hey, the book was independently funded. I'm going to send you a copy." And so I gave all 30 people that backed issue one a copy of the book. I even paid for shipping over to Australia and Europe. You know, I spent my own money on that because we never collected anything. And that was just the first book. And then a month later, everyone's like, "Where's book two?" And I was like, "Oh, crap. Now it's a thing. I got to do it."
Yeah, you're not spitting them out once a month. Come on now.
Yeah, everyone's like, "Where's issue two?" And I'm like, "What do you mean issue two? There's just one issue. Like, that's all I want to do is make a comic book and move on." Right. And they were like, "Well, I want to know more about the story." And I'm like, "Oh, crap. So here I am, you know, we got 42 issues to do." So.
Wow. I mean, I will say, if I read issue one knowing there wasn't another one, or not knowing if there was another one, I'd probably want another one too, because it does leave you hanging at the end of issue one.
Yeah, I'm a Saturday morning cartoon fan. You know, you right. Gotta leave it hanging. Yep. That was the thing.
That's fantastic. Is there anybody you dream to collaborate with, like a writer, famous, maybe the Image guys?
Well, I'd love to get, you know, any of them to do something for Chris. I met Jim Lee last year. He actually signed a selfie on my phone with my stylist. So this pen right here was officially used by Jim Lee.
That's cool.
I've met Rob Liefeld. I met Todd McFarlane when I was a kid. As far as like people I'd want to collaborate with, that's a good one. And of course, now the name is going to fail me, but the artist for Spawn right now.
Yeah, I don't have one with me here in this office. I don't have one.
Not Greg Capullo. I mean, I'd love to work with Greg Capullo, but that's just, you know, I have his name on the tip of my tongue, and he's been around for a long time, but I he's one of the artists I've always loved. Where are we? Spawn. Oh, jeez. He was doing Gunslinger Spawn number one. I know that. I'll just look that up. And I'm gonna shoot myself in the foot for what it says.
Yeah.
Bear with me for just a moment. Now I'm gonna.
That actually came up. Oh, it's fine. Like, because it came up a couple episodes ago. Somebody asked me, like, who my favorite artist was or favorite letterer. And I'm like, oh, God. Like, I don't even know. Like, I've done a horrible job, even though I've read, you know, 160 comics this year. I have a goal of reading one a day this year. I've done a horrible job of looking at like who the authors and artists are. I need to do a better job at that.
Here, let's see. I'm using my phone's internet for this, and it's not.
Not like there. It. You are.
Brett Booth. There we go. Thank you. I froze for a second because I was using my phone to figure out, and my phone is powering my laptop. Yeah, Brett Booth. Gotcha. There you go. I'd love to work with him. You know, his artwork is very reminiscent of the 90s, because he was like a 90s, early 2000s artist. And He has good composition with all of his panels. His anatomy is really solid, but it's loose enough to where it has like that action and that kind of like cartoony feel in some panels. So I love his stuff.
Do you pull from D&D, like in your world building? Like, is that how you build your world?
My, you know, the world for Crit is modern America. The only difference is after Katrina, these big companies kind of came in and rebuilt Katrina using their own money and arguably to gain influence over the city. So like the company Technetic that Crit originally works for and the company that they're interviewing for in issue zero when everything goes crazy is my version of Apple. They're like the biggest tech company in the world. They have this phone called the Technetic One, and it's they kind of bought influence in the city by saying, hey, we'll help you rebuild all your infrastructure and all this stuff. And so that's where the difference is in Crit, that, you know, 2005 through 7, you know, when they were rebuilding and everything. That's where my timeline really jettisons off. Now, there is some history because, like I just said, it's an Arthurian tale. So King Arthur is the first superhero, but he also eliminates all of magic and, you know, energy from this world in his timeline. So Crit reopens that in issue zero, and that's where the story kind of starts.
That's awesome. All right, a couple more. Which character is your favorite?
Well, that's tough because they're all my friends. They're all my friends.
Okay. So you may not be able to answer this question.
Favorite is not one of my friends. It's Samedi the cat because he gets drunk. He smokes cigars. He talks a lot of trash. And he's just, it's fun to draw a talking cat that gets drunk and smokes cigars. And
I did not see that coming at all.
Oh, yeah. Issue two. The end of issue one, you know, he shows up. Issue two, right. In the first couple panels, you see a Spectre feeding him rum. He's just drinking rum. In issue four, Samedi sits the day out because he's too drunk to do anything. In issue seven, in issue five, I introduce Pan, who is a chameleon, and Archimedes, who's an owl, and they're all Geed in this book, which you'll find out later. They're essentially just like angels, like your guardian angel kind of characters. They're familiars in the D&D world. And so they run the coffee shop that Crit eventually opens. And there's a panel where I introduce a robot called Dr. Roombato, who is a Roomba with a robot body put on top of him because Reach wants a robot. And he rolled really bad in games. So I told him, you successfully make the robot, but he's made out of a Roomba and some spare parts. So he rolls up. And what's a cat's worst enemy is a freaking vacuum. So Samedi has the ability to teleport. And this, as soon as the robot vacuum shows up, the cat's like, I'm out. He just disappears and he shows up at Spectre's feet and he just lays into him with this monologue of how he hates vacuum cleaners and how they're the bane of his existence. And that might be one of my favorite panels I ever wrote, was right there with the cat complaining about the vacuum cleaner.
That's awesome. So that's another question I didn't ask, but could have. Favorite panel. All right. So what, or if you would share it, are there any like Easter eggs in your comics? Do you do any kind of thing like that?
There's a ton. You know, there's in issue three, there's some little stuffed animals and those are like, I have little plushies that show up every once in a while and they're characters from my friend's books. So they don't exist in my universe, but that means that somewhere in pop culture, they exist. You know, they have a plushie and
smart.
I have, I drop a lot of like small, subtle things throughout the series that some people may eventually pick up on. Like, there's two characters that never physically interact. They don't shake hands. They don't do anything. And there's a very specific reason that you will find out much later on in the series that they've never interacted, because if they did, one of them would die. And there's a reason why Caliber doesn't pet the cat either.
He's allergic to cats.
No, actually, Spectre's allergic to cats. Okay. No, you know, Samedi's a being of pure energy, and you find out as the series goes on that Caliber's special ability is he's immune to all magical energy, but he's not just immune, he cancels it out. So, like, if Spectre throws a fireball at him, it does absolutely nothing to him. But if he touches Samedi, we don't know what would happen to Samedi. He may cease to exist, he may go to another plane, you know, like, but he wouldn't be where he's at because his powers would be nullified in his current form. So that's one thing I'll give away. Caliber never pets the cat because he doesn't want to kill the cat.
Makes sense.
He actually made that decision as a player. I was like, oh, Samedi's around. Like, and Samedi knows what he is, because Samedi's been around for so long, and he is from another dimension, made of pure energy, and knows exactly. I will say he doesn't know what Caliber is, but he doesn't see Caliber as we do. He sees him as a void in time and space. So he's like, I'm not touching that dude. You know, like, there's something going on over there. I'm not going near him. He's worse than a vacuum cleaner.
Right. That's fantastic.
So there's a lot of like subtlety about that, because with his power set being very unique, we never wanted to be heavy handed about it, because there's a lot of storytelling elements that go around his uniqueness. And, it ties into later some of the villains that we bring in. And even in issue 3, you know, we drop a little like Easter egg of like, oh, I thought all the children were dead, or were gone. One of the villains, Zaka, says that, and all Caliber has to do to him, because Zaka is a being of pure energy too. He's essentially a spirit and just takes over dead bodies. So when Caliber touches him, it kicks that. He can't bond to that being anymore. And Zaka knows, like, hey, like, I thought all of you were dead. And so you find out there is other ones like him, but they're not around anymore. So there's that. There's an issue 3 as well. At the end, you see Reach sitting across the table from the detective from, you know, issue 1, and they're sharing some information, and you're like, well, what's that about? And issue 4, very similar, you know, Reach is reaching out to him saying, hey, I've got like these two guys for you. So there's a lot of like little subtle things that we kind of put in the storytelling that do have payoffs later. I think the biggest one right now is the King Arthur book that is on Kickstarter right now is a lot of Easter eggs, a lot of subtle hints. It introduces King Arthur, the character, but doesn't tell you everything. I like storytelling that introduces something but isn't heavy-fisted with it, is very subtle and allows it to flow. So our D&D campaign, because we've been playing for 15 years, the storytelling aspects of even our D&D campaign flow very nicely, and I wanted that to go into the comic book.
That's awesome. That's so tell me about the Homebrewed Comics publishing.
So Homebrewed Comics. Yours?
Is that...
I'm the publisher, yes, which is a fun little title. My co-publisher, Drew Lenhart, he and I joined together last year. He ran Snowy Works. He still has it, but he only uses it for like novels, because he does a lot of novel work. But him and I, we joined forces in January, rebranded as Homebrewed Comics. I originally was Homebrewed Heroes. We went with Homebrewed Comics, and then we brought on Dan Price with Bigfoot Knows Karate and Dennis Valencia with The Celestial Knight. So it's all four of us now under the same, you know, publishing umbrella. We have an Amazon. We're on Amazon. We're on Barnes & Noble. We're on our site. And we just signed a contract with Philbo Distribution. So we'll go into stores the end of the year. Right now, like I said, I have a Kickstarter going for credit number 8, He Who Would Be King, which is my introduction of King Arthur. And then Dan has Bigfoot Knows Karate number 3 on Kickstarter as well. Both of them funded within 30 to 45 minutes.
That's phenomenal.
Dan's crushing it. He's like at 80 backers already. I think I just broke like 55 or 60 on crit. And we're almost 200% funded on both campaigns. So it's going very well. And then we launch Celestial Knight versus Caspian Porter June 21st. And the thing we're doing is if you back all three campaigns, so if you go right now, just go to homebrewcomics.com and back Bigfoot and Crit, you'll get, when those physical copies come in October, you'll have a coupon for Crit, a coupon for Bigfoot. And then if you do, Celestial Knight versus Caspian Porter, you'll get the third one. In October, when those books ship to you, because we're shipping all at the same time, you put those three codes together, go to our website, and you can fill out the form to get Homebrewed Zero, which is all individual content. So I'm doing a story about the animals running a coffee shop called Caffeinated Critters. Dan is doing a story about Bigfoot, but a side story. So it's all original content that will only be in that book. So that is like a network kind of like collect them all kind of thing that we're doing. And yeah, it's like, so to definitely go and back all the Kickstarters. So
all you can three. Get those yeah, definitely. Stories.
Yeah. And we're very inexpensive as far as the price points. You know, I think our base book starts off at like $8.
Right.
So you're not going to break the bank.
No, not at all. And I was going to ask about the Kickstarter, but you did a fabulous job. I noticed on your site you had all three and they're all running kind of together, and that's phenomenal. Yeah. You guys are doing fantastic work from what I can see. Tell me more about going into stores. What are you putting in the store?
We're putting all of our books. So
okay.
Starting fourth quarter, I believe, I think the ship date is October. Crit number 1, Bigfoot number 1, and Caspian number 1 are going into retail. And then every month we have another book. So I think it's because I have the most issues. I believe I'm going second. We have a lineup that we've submitted. I don't have it in front of me because clearly I'm not in my normal office. I'm at work. But I believe October is the 3 number ones. November is Crit number 2. December, I believe, is Caspian number 2. And then we do Bigfoot number 2. And then we get into Celestial Knight. And we have some other titles in there as well. I believe we're doing, we have Grit Grimstone in there and a few other books that we're going to release into retail. So
awesome. Yeah. And who's it going through? Like when the stores that are going to order, so I'm going to tell my local store. Yeah, what's the distribution? Yep.
It's Philbo Distribution, and you can go to, let me pull that up real quick. Stores can sign up by going to, let me go to his Facebook page. He has a lot of retailers already signed up on this.
Sweet.
He's been promoting. Give me one second just to find the website. So it is. He just posted it the other day.
And I'll add it to the show notes and stuff.
Say it's philbodistribution.com. But before I speak too soon, I just want to check. I'll just go to my website real quick.
Is it on your site?
Yep, it's philbodistribution.com. philbodistribution.com.
I cannot believe I spelled all that correctly. If you knew me better, if you knew me personally, you would be shocked too.
Perfect. Yeah, he's got the catalog. So if you sign up on the website, have a retailer sign up, he has the catalog on there. Zenoscope's on there. He's got Counterpoint Comics is on there. He's got Bill Tucci is on there. So he's got some big names that have signed up.
That's awesome. Congrats. That's going to be fan. So are you going to be on like League of Comic Geeks and all those like Key Collector and
I'm hoping, you know.
Okay.
Yeah, let's just hope our books sell really well, because we've got some awesome covers and I think we have good stories. So
absolutely. I'll definitely add them to my pull list. Is there anything that I didn't ask you that you want to share? Like, open floor, anything you want to talk about?
You asked me a lot of good questions, stuff I've never had to answer before.
Well, I'm trying. I mean, I'm new at this. So, I mean, I'm trying. I'm trying to take it seriously, right? Like, I don't want to just be like, oh, I don't know what to ask you. Like, what color is your
No, no, no. This was great. This was really good. So, I don't think you missed anything. I'll be honest. Okay. This was a really good interview. So thank you. Like I said, I do a lot of them too. And you asked me some I've never answered, and I've done 100 or more interviews. So this was great.
No, thank you for that. Wow. So I appreciate, you giving me the time and giving me that feedback that it was good. So that makes me feel good that I'm doing the right stuff. So
yeah, keep at it, man.
Awesome. Hey, well, I really appreciate it,
man. Thank you so much.